Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 354 of the Roguecast, recorded November 2nd, 2021. Book of Salacious Crumb.
All right, we have survived Halloween.
Yep.
It is now Christmas time, right? Is that how that works?
I don't know. Are we going to are any of the movies or things that we're talking about at the end of this be Halloween-y?
No, I don't think so.
All right, no sneaky extra last minute Halloween.
I mean, there's ghosts involved.
All right,
might be a little. And spooky never ends. What are you talking
about?
There's
some zombies. There's some ghosts. There's gods, aliens.
You know, Randy, your Facebook page and elsewhere, you've been compiling a list of holiday movies. Maybe we should bring that to the podcast in the next week or two. Our sort of holiday favorites, whether it be Die Hard or A Christmas Carol or whatever.
Let's do a Christmas draft. A Christmas movie draft.
Oh, I love this idea. Sweet 16, where we determine the best Christmas movie.
It's just going to be Die Hard. Just cut to the chase.
If Die Hard goes against like Scrooge, it could lose to, for me.
All right, well, we encapsulated it there. It's all done.
All right, Dave. Dave ruined our fun. Nick had a fun idea, and Dave just ruined it.
Y'all can go do that, but just you know how it's going to end. National Lampoon's Vacation could be up there, too.
I have discovered that I am more of a fan of, much, even though I really like holiday movies, definitely more of a horror movie fan than a holiday movie fan, although might be this is more horror movies.
There's, like, horror is, like, continuously coming out, and holiday stuff just crops up once in a while.
Right.
And there are some good Christmas horror, so.
That's true.
Yeah, there are.
I mean, Krampus, Gremlins, what's the one you were just talking about?
Better Watch Out, or...
No, Exports, Rare Exports.
Rare Exports. But there is one called... That's like the Home Alone kind of spoof. Or not spoof.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think my buddy Les was big.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So, they do exist, but it's a pretty small subgenre.
Anyway... We are about a couple weeks out from our Innistrad Crimson Vow pre-release because Magic is also extending the spooky another couple of weeks.
Right, right.
So if you like vampires...
Vampires will rise.
Yes.
They do every night.
They do.
That's why I said it.
We got a couple... We're still got a flood of new games and stuff. We're trying to stock up before the holidays, but there's definitely new stuff coming. We just got a big stock in of Player's Handbooks and Monster Manuals.
Yes, I smash my head against the desk every week when we get new games.
Yes. Well,
that's the behind-the-scenes look of Nick's life.
There is a lot.
When you walk in and Nick looks haggard and haunted, just know that he's a shell of a man.
Because I just imported 20 dice.
Yes.
Well, we do have, five distributors now, so...
Yeah.
Come in on a Monday and see me haggard from ordering all this crap.
Yep.
But we did get Seven Wonders Architects, which did you look at this, Nick? It's like a new player friendly Seven Wonders.
Yeah, and if you get it early, you get a bonus cat god piece or Egyptian cat god piece that is attached to the box.
Interesting.
It's very cool.
I don't know the deals on this one, but I know that I really like Seven Wonders. I really like Seven Wonders Duel.
That game has long proven itself.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious about this one. We also got Ankh, Gods of Egypt, which is like a big war game type thing where basically you're playing different gods. We got an expansion for it. This is one of the sort of the big releases. It had a big Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Asmodee just released it. And of course we still have Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, seems to have been going over well with people. A lot of people want to play like the new, what is it, what's the new Dragonborn class?
Gem.
The Gem Dragon and Dragonborn and stuff like that. And there's all kinds of cool stuff.
We should be getting a restock, hopefully, of the Marvel Champions.
Yes, the Mad Titan Shadow, which is the third campaign.
Which sold out almost instantly for us.
And we have a restock coming this week.
Cool.
And, it's Thanos and his, what are they called? The Black Order.
Yep.
And who are the heroes in it? Do you remember?
It has Star-Lord.
No, Star-Lord's
another pack.
Not Star-Lord. Who's the guy, the gold dude?
Adam Warlock.
Adam Warlock.
Oh,
yes, right.
I actually meant to say that. I just said Star-Lord. I don't know who the other one is.
I don't either, but it's a cool... And you get four villains, you get two heroes, you get, like, five scenarios. It's like a big pack.
It's really cool.
So, yeah. I should probably play that game at some point. I've got the main game, and I've been buying all of it. I have not played it yet.
Yeah, you have, like, 20 expansions for it.
Let's stop the podcast and go play it.
All right, fair enough.
All right, we're back.
There's also a fair amount of news, so let's jump over to that.
Sure.
Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas is coming to the Roku channel.
right?
That's on December 1st.
How accessible? I mean, how is the Roku channel?
It's not. If you don't have a Roku, you're out of luck. It's not like Apple Plus where you can download it on other things.
That's difficult. I mean, you've got Roku, Randy?
I've got a Roku.
I got to go over and watch it at your place.
Yep, you may have to. But yeah, it's a little weird. It's like, I have a Roku. I'm a weirdo. I have a Roku and an Apple TV. But it is a little weird to have something that you can only see if you have a Roku.
Yeah.
They also nabbed all of Quibi's content. So they have, like, they basically, Roku went from having nothing to having, like, 50 shows because Quibi made a billion and then died.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And there's some good stuff in there, so.
Well, like, so we've talked about Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist before. It was a really cool musical show that got canceled after, what, 2 seasons?
Yep, yep.
Two quite good seasons, and it has a little bit of a, what do you call it, extended lifespan because they're doing a movie, holiday movie.
Yep.
And there's, there's a scene from it. There's a big clip that shows a whole musical number.
Yes, what's the song?
It's Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
Which is usually, actually, a little bit more, like, kind of sincere and, like, I mean, they do sincere stuff, but that's a little more just traditional than they usually do.
Yeah.
Because, if you've never seen it, the whole premise is through, you know, weird voodoo means, she can hear the inner songs that play in people's heads that would be known pop songs and stuff like that from, like, the last few decades that they could tell you they feel one way, which is often how people do, and then they will start singing a song that only she can hear, and she will know what's going on with them, their heart song.
Yes. From what I understand, this ties a bow on the series.
Yeah, I think this may be the finale of it all.
Right. However, there is, if it does well, I feel like that there was talks of doing more.
I hope it does well.
It's certainly like an open enough idea that they could continue it, and even what they did in the finale to the second season, what could have been the series finale, was a neat idea,
yep.
And I would like to see more of it. So
I also would. I'm glad we're getting this.
I'm getting something. Yeah, yep. This is essentially, we're getting Serenity, the movie.
Yeah.
You know, a movie capper, probably.
Or Sense8, if you want to go that way.
Okay. I experienced this with Psych.
All right, but Psych's getting a second movie.
Oh, it's on its third movie.
Third movie.
All right.
Because Psych is amazing.
Well, then we will hope it gets that.
We want to hope it gets Psyched and not Serenity'd.
Yes.
I need to catch up on Psych, by which I mean I need to watch more than the 5 episodes I've watched.
I'm watching Castle right now. You speak of Serenity, and Castle starred Nathan Fillion. They put it all up on Hulu. He makes so many dang references to Firefly and Serenity throughout the entire thing.
Isn't that like, that seems cheesy to me. That seems like, remember that thing you liked? I do too.
Nathan Fillion seems cheesy?
Yes.
The hell you say.
Nathan Fillion's amazing.
Listen, I like Nathan Fillion, and I probably would like that show if I'd ever seen any of it. But
when
I
you go
feel
out
like
to your car, Nathan Fillion will be hiding in your back seat, and he will kill you.
Nathan Fillion does, I like Nathan Fillion as well, but he is cheesy.
Yeah. I'm just saying that sounds, I don't know, it seems hokey to me. Like on, you know, like, I don't know if you remember, but they show this during the opening to the A-Team. In the A-Team, Dirk Benedict walks by someone on a studio lot in a Cylon outfit, and he does a double take, like, what? Because he was on Battlestar Galactica, too.
Yes.
So I'm just saying that that it's this is the level of the A-Team when I see those kind of references.
And I'm okay with that.
I think the A-Team could have used more Cylons, to be honest.
If they had gone to like season 13 when it got weird, it's just like, yeah, they fight aliens now. It's just whatever.
All right, down the Cylon tangent.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who Dave, I don't know if you know Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She was on Fleabag, which is amazing.
She was the lead.
She was the lead and the writer. She co-wrote.
That's a show that's on my to-do list big time, just because I've seen a few scenes and they're always really good.
Great. She's going to be in Indiana Jones 5. She co-wrote No Time to Die, and she worked on Killing Eve, the first
season.
So that's
a knock against it. No Time to Die is...
I consider that a mark against it. But
she co-wrote.
But I also know that there's like... Man, and that's like a mega franchise. I'm not going to hold it too much.
Anyway, she's great. And she, along with Fiona Shaw, who also worked with her on Fleabag and was in Killing Eve... she also played Aunt Petunia Dursley in Harry Potter, a bunch of stuff. So they are teaming up for a new project from John Krasinski on Paramount Plus, I think?
Yeah.
That was originally called Imaginary Friends. It is some kind of comedy fantasy thing.
Fantasy like elves, swords,
stuff?
Magic?
No. So it says that It's a man who is able to see and interact with the imaginary friends of other people, particularly those who've been abandoned and forgotten. However, like everyone down on their luck, some of these discarded friends have decided to turn to the dark side, and it is down to him to save the world from their plotting.
I mean, that's a fun concept.
Yeah. 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 What's Phoebe Waller-Bridge is writing, starring.
She is somehow involved. I get quite well.
Okay.
She is signed onto it. Oh, is it with Ryan Reynolds? So Ryan Reynolds is the lead in this.
Huh.
And John Krasinski and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I mean, this is a stacked cast.
I can't tell if they're writing or
And it's a movie, not a show.
It's a show.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds is doing a show,
right?
He likes to do whatever he wants to do.
I guess so.
Or is it a movie? I can't quite. It's a film.
He didn't. Right. I mean, I was going to say he was on a TV show a long time
before he was Ryan Reynolds. He was on a TV show.
What TV show?
No, two guys, a girl, and a pizza place.
Okay.
Two guys, a girl, and a pizza place. Or is it? What did it eventually become?
I forgot what it was.
Guys and a girl. I think they dropped the pizza place.
Yeah, I think they did.
The pizza place wanted too much money for season 3.
If only he had stayed on that show.
Yeah.
And never emerged as Deadpool from
He might have amounted to something.
How many seasons did it last? I can't remember.
I think it was 3 seasons. I think it was 1 season of two guys, a girl, and a pizza place.
Two guys, two girls, and two pizza places.
Two guys and a girl. And then they added a second pizza place and the whole thing went to shit.
Pizza place and pizza place.
Good pizza place and bad pizza places left
it. It ran 4 seasons.
Wow, really?
81 episodes. It didn't reach the magical 100.
I wonder if it's streaming anywhere. Because that also, by the way, speaking of, had Nathan Fillion. He was the third guy.
Oh my god, he was.
So it was Ryan Reynolds. I don't remember who the lead.
Richard Ruccolo?
Oh sure, Richard Ruccolo. You know that guy.
I don't know. I mean,
I trust Nick.
And I feel like the girl is someone, but I don't remember who she was. I don't remember the lead.
Trailer Howard. She's actually been in some stuff that
you remember. Someone named a girl Trailer?
Yeah.
Not cool.
Huh. Okay. But anyway, yeah, she was living with two guys. One was Ryan Reynolds, one was another guy, and then her boyfriend was Nathan Fillion.
That's right. I guess
arguably
forgot.
That's probably fulfills someone's fantasy right there.
It was a fun show. They had a Halloween episode where they all murdered each other. there was like hallucinations and one of them was a psycho killer, which is one of the more well-known episodes of it. Anyway, that has nothing to do with any of this, but this is a good, this is a stacked cast and producing crew. Sounds like a fun concept.
Yeah.
I like me a Ryan Reynolds movie. I love Free Guy, so
He loves Deadpool.
I hate Deadpool.
Right?
No, you're going to love Deadpool in the MCU.
Nope, hate Deadpool.
What if Deadpool popped up during the Eternals?
Well, that's fine.
Almost a draw for me.
That'd be fine, actually, because Eternals, yeah, I don't know if it's getting review bombed or what. There's been some talk, but it is the first Marvel movie not to be fresh on Rotten Tomatoes for anyone at the time. So I'm going to see it next week. We'll see
what happens.
The
Deadpool could probably be like, so y'all are like space gods, right?
I'll be curious because you're going with kids, and yep. I don't know how kids are going to react to this.
They're going to be bored to death.
Hey, kids, are you ready for the Lord of the Rings of superhero movies?
We shall see. We shall see. Hulu is developing a show from the director of The Host, or not The Host, Host. Rob Savage, based on a, 20, 30-year-old Stephen King?
Yeah, it's a short story called The Boogeyman, and it was in Night Shift, which was one of my...
Was that like 1980? I think thereabouts?
1978.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually my favorite collection 40 of plus short, years short ago. Stories.
Yeah. Yeah, Night Shift was his first, I think... Was it his first collection? It's basically collected the year after The Shining became a bestseller. This says this will be the 10th short story in the 20-story collection to be turned into a feature film or TV movie.
Yeah, there was that TV show that kind of adapted several of them.
And... Yeah, but also Children of the Corn, Maximum Overdrive, The Mangler, and Sometimes They Come Back were all in this.
Some of those were
arguably
not good
should have stayed short stories. Maybe.
Some of them, yes.
But so the notable thing here is that Host is, if for people who don't remember, is the horror movie that we kind of talked up pretty strongly. I would say about a year ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was it was on Shudder, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was told entirely through Zoom. Essentially, mm-hmm. It was like actual Zoom. Right when we were all using it, it was a horror movie about Zoom.
Yep.
Where some friends get together and like they decide they're going to do a distanced seance, yeah, And it's very creepy and cool. It's also like a real brisk movie. It's like an hour and 10 minutes or something.
If you have
like
Shudder, I highly recommend watching it.
If you have Shudder and you haven't watched it, what are you even doing?
They could be watching one of the other 700 movies that are on Shudder.
I think half the people who have Shudder are just rewatching that like Evil Dead show or something.
Evil Dead's on Netflix.
Maybe they're watching Psycho Goreman over and over again.
Maybe, I guess. Whatever.
I watched it was okay.
I love Psycho Goreman.
They're making a 2.
I know, I'm excited about it.
Nick will be watching Fear Street and Randy will be like, meh.
If they make another Fear Street, I would definitely watch that. I love the Fear Street movies.
The writers on this Boogeyman project, there's been several. The writer from Black Swan is writing the script now. It was created
That's quite the pedigree.
It was originally developed by writers of A Quiet Place and Malignant. That is quite a diverse...
That's a pretty big spread. Malignant is the weirdest one in that mix because... for those who haven't seen it, it's bonkers. It's just freaking crazy.
It's time to cut out the cancer.
A lot of Stephen King books are a little crazy.
But now, so I have not read this since I was like a kid, and it freaked me out.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Freaked me out too.
But I don't remember a lot about it. Now let me ask you this, Nick, without saying too much, because I think I want to reread it. Does it seem like something that could be expanded into a movie, or are they going to have to do some lifting?
They'll do some lifting because I feel like it was just like a bottle episode essentially in one room, like a psychiatrist's room, if I remember correctly.
I've seen this done, at least I would say somewhat successfully with like clearly a lesser sort of concept maybe, but what was that, Lights Out, that internet short?
Yeah.
With the creepy thing in the hallway where when the lights flickered it was like closer and all that stuff. They did a movie for that like through Blumhouse, I think, and I thought it was pretty decent.
It was
like good solid kind of teen horror movie, and so it can be done, you know. That's kind of a lighter weight stuff. I assume Boogeyman will be creepier, rated R, probably
so.
We'll
see if somebody can, other than Mike Flanagan, can adapt Stephen King to a good degree.
Yeah, I'm trying to think I still say that. Rob Reiner is the king for Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me, but he wasn't doing... Oh, and Misery, right?
Yeah.
Did he do all of those? No, not Shawshank. No, that was What's His Face later.
Yeah.
Who I don't like Darabont as much. But for Stand By Me and Misery, I feel like Reiner has the two best King adaptations.
I think Flanagan does. I think with Gerald's Game and Dr. Sleep.
Those are both good, but they're not as good as Rob Reiner's.
Interesting.
I'm trying to feel like...
He occasionally will drop the ball a little bit with me for like sort of his endings or for like a scene will sort of fall a little flat, obviously Flanagan's good. I'm a big proponent, and has anybody else made like kind of good like Stephen King movies other than those two guys?
I mean, people arguably like Darabont's stuff.
Yeah, okay, Darabont's solid. I like Green Mile too.
Mist, Green Mile, Shawshank.
Those are his big three. I know he would make a lot of people's cut. He's of those three, I only really like Green Mile, and Shawshank Redemption has good scenes in it, but is a little, I don't know, a little maudlin maybe.
Who did Carrie? Isn't Carrie regarded as
that was De Palma?
Good?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
De Palma seems like a guy with.
Oh, and I guess Kubrick's Shining probably has a following.
Except Stephen King hates it.
Yeah, so it's been funny.
With a passion.
What about, we're forgetting it's really important. What about Dreamcatcher?
Oh, cool. Great point.
Wow.
Dreamcatcher, I remember being so excited for that because William Goldman wrote it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be so
good.
You would
think, yeah.
It was real bad.
Now, we probably shouldn't sidetrack too much because there have been so many Stephen King adaptations, we could talk about them forever.
That's true.
By the way, I want to quick throw a shout out to John Carpenter's Christine. Underrated, good flick.
Yeah.
Good flick.
All right. So let's talk about the teasers and trailers we watched. We watched the teaser for something called Wendell and Wild, which is an animated show coming next year to Netflix. It stars Key and Peele, who I don't think have been together for a while now. Like
they're also working on the story together too.
And that's cool. However, this teaser is nonsense, and I don't know what happened in it.
Well, it was very short,
and it's Henry Selick. It's the guy who did Nightmare Before Christmas, so
and
it's Coraline. Got the sort of.
Is it going to be stop Coraline motion?
Yes,
like those.
Yeah,
okay.
But it looked like about demons in a beatbox.
Yes, there were demons, there was a beatbox, there was a grub that they smashed, and they poured something on it, and they brought it back to life.
Yep.
That's what happened.
Yeah, it was just a little sort of, this is going to be eccentric and weird mood piece.
Yep.
I like Peel. I like Ish. Selick, is that who that guy is?
Yeah, Henry Selick.
He's okay.
Yeah. I think it was pedigree for me. I like all those people. I will watch this.
As always, Nick, I will remind you, good people do bad things sometimes.
Has Henry Selick made a bad movie?
It's like a fatherly lesson.
It is.
Has Henry Selick made a bad movie?
I have never seen Coraline.
I like Coraline. Right. That's a good one.
Has he made three movies, though? Because if he's made two good movies, that's good. That's not a great track
record. He made Coraline, James the Giant Peach, Nightmare Before Christmas.
He did all the stop-motion things were produced by Tim Burton, right?
Yeah.
And then a lot of shorts.
Okay, all right.
He clearly knows his way around stop-motion animation.
Yes. He also did the movie Monkey Bone, which, yes, that was a horrible movie.
And I think some of those other ones are not great, but they're all at least good, I'd say.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing Key and Peele together again.
Sure.
So I'm looking for it.
I don't think I'll watch them in a baby cartoon, but y'all tell me how it is.
I'm more excited about the other stuff for the most part, like the Book of Boba Fett trailer, which drops at the end of December.
Why do they call it the Book of Boba Fett?
Because it sounds cool.
It does sound cool.
Why do they call it the Sand Spider? It sounds scary.
When last we saw
how Boba many people Fett, are going to get that reference?
And did anyone get that True Lies reference?
Oh, you gave away what
you
it was.
You gave it away.
I know.
That was spoken by the nerdy guy. No, that was spoken by Charlton Heston.
No, it was an
exchange.
Charlton Heston says, why do they call him the Sand Spider?
And then the
nerdy guy says, probably because it sounds scary.
Yeah. Great, nice. Perfect example of slightly deflating the mystique of these kind of movies.
Yep.
But anyway, what are we talking about?
Why they called the Book of Boba Fett.
And right.
So last we saw him at the end of Mandalorian, at the post-credit sequence, he and Fennec Shand, played by Melinda May, was an actress.
I always blank on her name.
Me too.
They assumed Jabba the Hutt's
throne. It's not Michelle Yao.
It's not Michelle Yao. But they go in. They kill Ming-Na Wen. They go in. They kill Fat Bib Fortuna.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten that.
And then he sits on the throne.
Off screen, I was asking, what's Boba Fett's motivation? I kind of got the impression that where he used to maybe just be chasing cash around, that maybe after his Tatooine desert survival decades, that he was just I just want to be a simple man and live my life.
I don't think he wanted to be a simple man. But he
would say stuff like that, right? Maybe that was his dad in the prequels. His dad said stuff like that.
Yeah. His dad gets head
cut off. I could have sworn he said stuff like that between smashing stormtroopers to pieces in that.
I never got the sense that Boba Fett wanted to settle down.
Maybe not settle down, but it was like he wanted to be like a nomad, like a Sergio Leone character.
Instead, he wants to be the Space Godfather.
I mean, I guess the trailers look cool.
Yeah.
It shows him kind of doing the negotiating with Jabba's lieutenants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spotted some Ponda Baba people. I spotted
that's a walrus man.
The Trandoshans in there.
Yeah, there were several Trandoshans.
I also he's talking to a mayor of baby Mos Eisley, who's like a big hammerhead dude.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Salacious Crumb?
Probably get barbecued eaten.
Well, let's see.
Did he get killed in the Return of the Jedi?
R2 had shocked him.
He shot him, and he
was up in the rafters.
Yep.
And he probably got blown to Kingdom Come. They could bring him back if they wanted.
We never saw the body. Salacious Crumb.
Here's,
sure, sir.
Here's what I would like. I would like for him to come back briefly and be killed. he's made some big plan to get Boba Fett, and he's got a little army of Salacious Crumb dudes, and Boba Fett just flamethrowers them to pieces.
But Dave, then how are we going to do my sequel, The Book of Salacious Crumb?
I'm hopeful because of its title, The Book of Boba Fett, that we'll get some flashbacks to Sarlacc Pit, and maybe even before
then. I think we may be getting his life story.
Yeah, I suspect we will see all that. It'll be the big test there, and I should say they don't show that in this trailer.
No.
But the big test will be if they do that, can it somewhat redeem the kind of lackluster stuff from the prequels?
Well, Filoni and company have definitely done a good job of redeeming various things. So. Yeah,
it's kind of like his job, basically.
And Boba Fett has been in some of the Filoni stuff. Yeah. So.
You know what's interesting is that, at that thing, as happens in these sort of scenarios, think Joker taking over in Batman 89 and stuff like that, some of the lieutenants don't seem like they're super into him taking over.
No.
But he's kind of, at least, he's playing it cool, it seems like.
Yeah.
There is a clear kind of threat to his voice, But he seems like he's...
he's going to be doing a lot of team building in this one. He's like... it's all going to be... He's a gentle boss.
Well, it's interesting because...
He's more like the office in space.
He's enigmatic.
Yes.
I can't quite tell what his goals are.
Yeah.
Other than he clearly wants to do some uniting... He's kind of doing... It's a little bit like Cyrus at the beginning of the Warriors. Like, this, you know, if you guys will get on board, he's like, we could all become rich.
Oh, I see True Lies is too obscure. But The Warriors is fine.
I named the movie I was talking about.
I did too, and then you guys yelled at me about that.
That's because you ruined the game. At that point, it had become a game. I hope the sand spider kills you.
We also saw the trailer for The Witcher Season 2, which I think, Dave, neither you nor I were particular Witcher fans.
You're definitely in the minority because it's Netflix is like
super huge popularity.
Yeah,
because Witcher is like, what if Frodo could swear?
That's a pretty good pitch, actually.
What if Frodo could swear and, you know, have sex?
Yeah.
I did notice.
Oh, Frodo fucked.
Oh, did he?
I could tell. It's read between the lines.
I did see they definitely doing another big sword sequence because there is that memorable quick sword fight in Season 1.
Yeah.
They're also up in the monsters a bit.
Yep, they did seem that there's a little more money.
There's a tree monster.
There's a tree monster that looks really cool.
Anyway, I'm probably not going to watch this, but this trailer did make me want to watch it.
I think it's a pretty good trailer, and I kind of agree, even though something about it, like, I just can't get invested in it. Like, I don't really care about any of the characters, including him.
Yep.
He's a fun enough presence. I like the bard guy. They're all kind of fun presences. But I'm just not... I never became invested after watching, like, 5-6 episodes.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was, too.
I couldn't get into the video game. I tried.
Oh, interesting.
But
If I heard enough good stuff from people, I'd probably consider watching this, because I do like things with swords and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not as big of a fantasy aficionado, so this is a harder sell for me.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the trailer for Lightyear, which is Pixar's... Is this a Disney Plus show?
No, I think it's...
Is it a movie?
It's a movie.
Okay. I don't know what it is. I know Chris Evans is playing Buzz Lightyear.
So, you could tell me that I'm completely wrong, but this is the real Buzz Lightyear, like Space Rangers. This is what the toy is based off of.
But
it's in the future.
Yeah.
This is clearly in the future because they have, like...
It's where they, like, they show, like, a big space launch, and I'm like...
It almost looks like a 60s NASA space launch, or a 70s or 80s.
I feel like the Space Rangers should have pretty easy, like, hyperspace and all that stuff. It seems weird that he's, like, doing a big space launch. It's cool. I just don't know what we're watching. I thought it was a little weird also that one of the big selling points is Chris Evans' voice, and there's one line.
Yeah. So,
I guess it's more of a mood piece. You know, it's kind of like, it does have that vibe of like The Right Stuff kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
But like pushed forward into it, it's like a slightly pulp thing because, you know, it still has more of like a slightly futuristic spaceship look, not like a space shuttle or something.
Yeah. I'm not disinterested, but I'm definitely not like, oh wow, I can't wait for this.
The animation looked good. It looked kind of like a little bit sort of real world, mm-hmm. like, you know, like sort of more realistic Buzz Lightyear, but with the, you do see him putting on the iconic space armor thing.
Yeah. Nick, what were you saying?
The synopsis, or the thing that I just pulled up, is saying it's serving as an origin story for the fictional human character Buzz Lightyear, who inspired the action figure of the same name.
So is it just supposed to be that, like, theoretically in Toy Story world, it's a sort of heightened enough Earth that there's, I don't know, people going to... Well, I don't know, is he going to Mars?
It can't be that he's actually in, like, that he's in Andy's world. That'd be very weird.
I mean, aside from the animation looking a little bit different.
They do have Pizza Planet. That's
Toy Story happened in the 80s. There's no way.
It didn't happen in the 90s.
It was the 90s. Yeah, I don't know. At any rate, it definitely did not seem futuristic. It seemed a little deliberately throwbacky.
Right, right. You know, that kind of Spielberg-y suburbia kind of vibe to it.
Yeah. Unless that's all part of a space planet.
Those, like, maybe the claws are master aliens.
Yes.
Are based on real aliens that we interact with and have a trade with in space.
I have to admit, if they actually did that, it was, like, revealed, like, deep in the Toy Story mythology. Like, yeah, actually, it takes place in this weird sci-fi world. I'd be like, okay, I did not see that coming.
That's right. The toy of Mr. Potato is, of course, based on the actual sentient potatoes
that
roam the world. yes, if they get that bonkers with it, I'm for sure on board.
Yeah, I'd be on board.
as it is, other than this looks like fairly quality, you know, obviously editing and directing and stuff like that, I don't know quite what to make of it yet.
Yeah, me neither. However, I am very excited about Cowboy Bebop because they put out an actual trailer. We'd already seen the opening sequence, which was really good.
Yep.
And then that little sort of episode zero kind of thing they did. That was basically like a little...
Kind of a primer.
A little primer thing. This is an actual trailer, which
they've
I thought...
all been looked, good, by the way.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, half the work is done by the music. The music's really good. But
there's like its particular brand of quippiness,
yeah.
Which still actually does feel to me like anime.
Yeah.
Like it has like kind of a vibe of it in that kind of fun same way, honestly, that y'all know I'm not as big a fan of Speed Racer, y'all, but I did like for sure parts of it. And like it reminds me of what I liked about Speed Racer. It's kind of got a neat heightened reality to it. The characters all kind of have a lot of energy to it. What is it, Faye? Faye, Jet, and Spike are the leads.
And Ayn.
Single syllable.
And Ayn. But no Edward.
Pictured.
Not yet. But that character doesn't come in until like episode 20 or
so. 18. One of my friends was posting, and she was saying that she was a little down on the notion of a live action Cowboy Bebop because she's like, why adapt this to live action? And I can't quite tell. I was trying to tell her, I think this is not supposed to be an adaptation. There's a lot of specific references, though.
There are like. I mean, there were like 60% of that trailer were from the actual series.
Yeah. Was it? Okay. Yeah. I was under the impression that they were telling a new story.
It might be like out of like sequence of like the original series, but it's definitely like all of Spike's backstory, like him talking to the bartender, that's straight out of the
mouse environmentalist terrorist.
I wonder if they might sprinkle iconic sort of scenes or just memorable moments, not necessarily iconic. And then still have a new story to tell, like in just a lost adventure or several lost adventures or whatever they want to do.
I think that's possible.
But in, along the way, this is kind of what Kurt Busiek did when he did Conan for Dark Horse, which is he would do one story where he would adapt one of the books, and then he would do the next story would be some original sequence.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a way to ignore Spike's backstory. I think you have to do that.
Yeah.
You have to do Vicious.
That makes sense.
Although
using the actual scene in which it's revealed in the original... is a little bit unusual. Like, you could have it revealed in some new way. So I don't know quite why they chose that. All I know is that whatever I'm seeing looks really good.
It's become sort of iconography for the show.
You show Krypton and Jor-El and Lara.
Yeah.
Batman and the pearls.
Right.
With Cowboy Bebop, it's the ships and the music, which the same guys who did the music for the original came back and did it for this one, for this show.
That's right. I remember hearing that. That's very cool. By the way, speaking of the pearls that Martha was wearing, although I did enjoy the Long Halloween special well enough that came out last week, it was funny to me. I believe they show like where she bought the pearls is like kind of a thing early on.
Oh,
I'm like, at last, the origin
of the
story
pearls.
Of the pearls.
Yep. Yeah, that was a bit on the nose.
Matt Reeves does kind of pearl funny. Things in the Batman.
He's going to.
He's not going to. I actually bet he will not. I'll go ahead and put down some money now.
I will say, I like these trailers so much that I willingly started watching anime. I went back to watch Cowboy Bebop, which I've never seen.
Hardcore.
And I've watched like 6 episodes.
The show's great.
It's fun. But I'm super excited for the live action one.
Yeah, there is something like there is something sometimes that actors bring to a role that you know that animation doesn't. They have their advantages and disadvantages.
I was amused apparently that the actors who voiced them in Japan are coming back to do all the dubbing for the characters.
That's pretty awesome.
Which is fantastic.
I'm a little, you know, we talked about this before. There have been so many missteps in adapting anime to live action.
Yeah.
I mean, Netflix in particular has been the source of several of them,
Death
I think.
Note, we're looking at you.
Yeah. And it seems like they're doing everything right here.
Yeah, it does.
I hope it comes off. It would suck if it somehow wasn't as good as it looks.
Everybody's so skeptical, too, and I'm like, oh, it looks good, though.
Oh, are they skeptical? I kind of thought the general air was...
All the anime fans are skeptical.
Okay. Well,
they've gone out of their way.
That's understandable.
Yeah,
to engender a lot of, you know, hype for it. I mean, all the stuff that they've shown has been great.
Yeah.
But when has there been a successful live-action anime?
They do. Right. That we could get the successful live-action anime before we get the successful, or like a really good video game adaptation.
No, this is coming out right after Uncharted, right? It's not, actually.
No, Uncharted is next year.
But also it doesn't matter, because Uncharted is not going to be the first
video game. This is hitting, in what, 12, 15 days?
Yeah, it's in a cute couple of weeks. I just want to take a cheap shot on Uncharted.
Uncharted will
Mark
not...
Wahlberg will not stand for that. He will throw acid in your face.
I will put money down. Uncharted is not going to be the worst movie, video game adaptation.
The worst? Oh. No. Well, that's a bar. That's a
that
really
was probably like
bar.
Resident Evil 7.
No, I feel like Resident Evil, like all of those at least.
I don't know. I gotta throw in. I haven't seen all the video game movies, but Monster Hunter was pretty bad, guys. I did see Monster Hunter.
Did not see.
It had some redeeming value.
It was pretty bad.
You know what's funny is, of course, Street Fighter is awful, but Street Fighter is awful in a true cult way.
Yes, yeah. It's awful in an entertaining
way. It's very watchable.
It's not like the new Mortal Kombat, which was awful and boring.
Yeah. That was.
All right, and on that point of agreement, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about all the comics for this week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 3rd, and wow, is it a big week.
And a good week. Like a week that kind of came through, including some stuff that I wasn't really expecting to be good. Yeah. Was good. And... There's stuff I didn't get around to that I'm very excited about. So
yeah,
so
it's always nice to get some surprises.
Yeah, let's kick it off.
So first of all, this is one that's not a surprise. Dark Knights of Steel number one. This is by Tom Taylor and Yasmin Putri.
And if you were to sum it up, I would say it's Game of Thrones in the DC universe.
Yeah.
From the guy who made Deceased and Injustice.
Yep.
and like does. Some of the best alternate world stuff at DC.
Yep. This is very focused on a... basically, the opening sequence has, instead of Jor-El and
Lara
launching Kal-El as a baby off to Earth, they get in a rocket ship because Lara's still pregnant. They arrive on Earth, and as she's giving birth, these horsemen drive up or come up.
And they're about to
and
attack.
And they're about to kill them, and Jor-El burns them all to death with his heat vision.
Establishing himself as a danger and a power and like a witch in this world, kind of.
And then it jumps to
and it's all being like prophesized by a character. That's very cool.
Yep.
Yeah. So you will eventually see in this. Well, as it's part of the title, I won't. I'm not going to say everybody, but Batman plays a role in this. And a kind of an interesting role. It's not one of those things where they just all land in the place where it's like, oh, he's going to be like the dark protector of the streets or something like that.
No, it's very different. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He actually has a tie to the House of El.
Yep.
And it's an interesting scenario. Alfred is in it.
Yep. I actually really liked what they did with Alfred and the Robins.
Yep. The Robins was a very cool idea.
Harley's in it.
Harley is in it. I mean, yeah, I think that was on the covers and stuff. So she is like the court jester.
But also in rereading, I read this a little while back as a preview, and rereading it, I was like, oh, there's a lot of hints as to what's actually going on with the backstory of Bruce and the backstory of the elves that we just get hints of in this first issue. And this is a 12-issue miniseries. We know that Tom Taylor's good at world building and doing alternate world stuff.
Yep.
The art is really, really nice. I think this is going to be a big
It is hit. An easy recommend. Yeah. Like, if you like anything DC, just go ahead and pick it up. Yep.
Tom King has his newest Black Label, I guess 12-issue miniseries, right?
Sometimes those 8-issue ones
sometimes
now.
Sometimes it's 8. Anyway, this is Human Target, a somewhat obscure character, a guy, Christopher Chance, who...
he impersonates people targeted for assassination so that he can draw out the assassin.
Right.
So he's an old, like, ultimate, 60s...
He's the ultimate bodyguard.
Yeah, he's like a 60s DC character who's like kind of more of a crime and suspense character than a superhero dude.
But he impersonates Lex Luthor, and he winds up in a situation where he only has a little bit of time to live, and he's trying to figure out who tried to kill Lex Luthor and accidentally killed him instead.
Yep.
So that's a mystery, and it's got art by Greg Smallwood, and is really beautiful. Like, that's the big selling point, I think.
Yeah.
You know, this is a gorgeous book.
It also has ties to a group of DC characters that, it is an unusual choice to bring in.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'm not a particular Tom King fan, but I'm at least kind of, points for weird ambition. I think people... even if you're not interested, you might want to look and see who those characters are and see if it draws you in.
Yeah.
I'm very hopeful that this means they're going to reprint some Human Target stuff.
Maybe.
I would like to see that stuff back in print.
Well, I would
so
like
good.
To see the Vertigo stuff. Yeah. The original 60s stuff I don't have too much interest in.
Well, no, that's what I was talking about, the Vertigo stuff.
The Vertigo stuff was great. That was Peter Milligan, I think.
Yep.
There's a book called New Burn from Image that I think this is mine and Dave's like pick of the week.
I think
probably.
Nick too.
Oh, it is. Do you like this too?
I think it is easily the pick of the week.
Except there's also a Brubaker book, so there's some good, there's a lot of good stuff.
This is the start of a new series, and the Brubaker book is like.
But you read a preview of the Brubaker book. I couldn't just sit down and read because it's a full graphic novel. Yeah.
But at any rate, this is a crime book from Chip Zdarsky writing. Jacob Phillips, who's doing That Texas Blood.
Texas Blood.
Who I think is Sean Phillips' son.
It is.
And has his sort of art style, and it's really good.
He's super talented.
And the quick pitch is, it is about a guy who is a private detective, who is basically the cop or detective for mobsters.
Yeah. He's unaffiliated with any specific family.
He works for everybody. That includes, like, the Bratva and the...
Russian mob.
Yeah, and there's kind of,
Yakuza.
Like, a new, like... It's based in reality, but it's clearly... There's some world building as he builds up the way the mob works and who the families are in his story.
Yeah.
But it's a sort of done-in-one detective story about this guy's stepping into his world for a case.
It's like the crime version of Law & Order, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty good. You know, the crime version of Philip Marlowe or name your detective.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character.
He's a really good character, and there's some really good dialogue in this.
Tons of great scenes in it.
Zdarsky has really just become one of these go-to guys for me.
There's a journal that runs through it that the entries are great.
Yep.
I mean, to me, this is this is one of the best first issues of the year.
Yeah, it's really good. Well, Zdarsky has been killing. He's Stillwater's really good.
Yep.
His Daredevil is really good. Spider-Man Life Story was really good. Like, he's become one of the best writers in the business. So, yeah, definitely worth a look. I think we all would highly recommend this one.
Very much.
It's been a little while since we've remembered to bring out our staff picks, and I might bust it out.
Do it. There is an image book called A Thing Called Truth, which is from, I think, the creators of Alice in Leatherland.
It is.
And this is a queer crime road trip science book. There's a character who invents something, gets it stolen from her by unscrupulous companies, and she and this mysterious woman basically are going to try and steal it back from them.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. The art is great.
Yeah.
There's
a sequel to The Magic Order, which I forgot had come out. This is one of the Netflix properties that Mark Miller's doing.
Yep.
Art by Stuart Immonen, so it's gorgeous. Basically, it's a sort of a conspiracy book where the Magic Order is this family of basically magic protectors. They keep magic people in line, and it seems like another family that is like the dark magic people.
As a magical turf war.
Yeah, there's a younger person who's like, let's take this back. Let's stop letting the Magic Order cops run things. And so, yeah, it's going to be magic conspiracy stuff.
And although the one has previously existed before this, I know Mark Miller enough to know that he kind of tries to make sure any given miniseries could be read standalone.
So. Yeah, this definitely does not feel like, what happened to the previous. This feels like a standalone series.
Yeah.
There's a new book from Ahoy Comics called My Bad that is an anthology superhero, supervillain thing.
It's by Mark Russell.
Mark Russell writes a lot of it. And it's goofy and fun. Their Batman is a guy named The Chandelier. His catchphrase is, need a light. And his fortune, his Bruce Wayne-style fortune, came from his family's light fixtures business.
I think we could say that there's some Tick influence on
that.
Yeah,
there is. There is. One of his best buddies, one of his frenemies, is the Hulk. There's a Superman riff. It's very funny. I don't always go in for the superhero parody, but this one was really fun. It's definitely worth a look. Also in the superhero parody style is Knighted from AWA, the guys who do Resistance.
Yeah, that's JMS's comic company.
This is their like Batman, who basically this guy accidentally gets him killed, and then with the help of his Alfred has to take over for him.
It's a fun premise.
Then there's The Heathens over at Aftershock.
That was a sort of a fun surprise for me this week.
Yeah, it's a Cullen Bunn book.
It starts out with a lady pirate.
Yep.
Gunning down some people, and this sense that she's like a historical figure.
Yep.
And then she kind of like returns to her handler, who's Joseph Stalin.
Yep.
And then you see that she and Billy the Kid
and Lucky Luciano and Bumpy Johnston.
Yeah, are in charge. It seems like of re-killing escapees from hell.
In this case, Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. It's a crazy, wild concept, but I actually liked the interaction with it. I think like Colin Bunn when he's doing the R rating. His dialogue feels a little more natural to me. And I like watching these characters interact. It's a fun, ridiculous premise.
Yeah.
And it's actually not treated too goofy.
Okay.
They play it fairly straight. I say that's a ridiculous premise, but they don't camp it up or anything right. like that. It's taken at face value.
I mean, it is a ridiculous premise.
Yeah. But like I said, it's not a comical book though.
No, it's played straight.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Gillian March has a book. This is some of his older stuff from his European days. If you don't know the work, he's worked on Catwoman, Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah.
What else? What has he done recently?
Batman. He did like just Batman? Straight Batman stuff. He's a very talented artist in many circles, known for his beautiful women.
Yeah. So this is
he's a very, very good artist.
This is a book called Laura and Other Stories, and just seems to be sort of his kind of just a straight romance story from a European style. Very pretty. Vault has a new book called The Rush, which is sort of a horror western set in the Gold Rush times. Again, really pretty art. I don't know who this artist is. Nathan Gooden.
Yeah,
but it's
good.
Really great looking. And then there's a lot of... Okay, so notable, Lore Olympus came out. This is a webcomic about...
It's the Greek gods, but it's Hades and yep. Persephone in particular.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a modern rethink of, like, all of them, I think. I haven't really read it, but I know it is, like, has a huge fandom.
It does. Like, and it's really pretty.
Yeah. There's tons and tons of quotes from people on it. Like, chances are, actually probably pretty decent that you might have already heard of it or even have read it online. But look into it. I feel like this is going to be, even just make it that much bigger. It's going to be huge, probably in comic form.
Yeah,
in physical media.
If you know anyone, who reads web comics, this is probably a thing you want to get them for Christmas.
Yeah, and all nerds at some point have been into mythology.
It's
just
true.
Just fess up. It's we true. Know it.
Marvel put out Hawkeye: The Saga of Barton and Bishop, which is a big trade that collects the entire Matt Fraction, David Aja, Hawkeye run. Just in time for it to be pretty much adapted to the
show. So it is the entire run. I thought there was maybe a little bit more.
It's the entire run.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It has the 1 through 22 in the annual and Young Avengers Presents number 6. So it's basically the introduction of Kate outside of, Young Avengers. And the introduction of Pizza Dog, the tracksuit Dracula's, all stuff that you're probably going to see in the show. And... It's a pretty great anthology. I mean, it's a nice big trade.
Did we mention it's just like super good art? I think you probably said that.
David Aja is fantastic. The Joker Vault hardcover by James Tynion and Gillian March. That's what I was looking for.
There we go. He's doing the Joker book.
This is a book that we all have been very surprised to enjoy as much as we have.
Yeah.
But it's also a Jim Gordon book.
It's a stealth Gordon book about a secret organization that's knows that he's suffered from at the Joker's hands almost more than anybody else, and offers to pay him exorbitant sums to fund his tracking and killing of the Joker.
Go find him in Belize and kill him.
Yeah, and so you get a lot of that, and along the way you get a lot of these ways of trying to understand the Joker, which I think are much more interesting and well written than anything else I've seen in maybe ever.
Yeah.
It's a more thoughtful approach to it. It's got a good suspense vibe. Like, the book moves and has a lot of energy. But the stories, get in the Joker's head in a way that I think is... a lot of them have been very superficial. I think this is not superficial.
No, it's really good. I mean, it's a book that had Dave and I considering, are we going to buy a Joker hardcover? Which is pretty hard to do.
Yeah, we didn't want... None of us wanted this book.
Yeah. Critical Role has a new thing. The Mighty Nine Origins is the first in a series of small hardcovers. This is the story of Jester, a tiefling. They're tiefling. And it is his origin. And I believe this is a whole new story. I don't think it's been done before. And so that they're going to start doing a few of these, just a little hardcover. Also, there's a bunch of other stuff just like... That was all the just jumping on points and stuff, but the penultimate issue of Me You Love in the Dark, which I've been really enjoying.
Yeah, the Me You Love in the Dark is a really good penultimate issue. I was telling Randy that if they pull off a good finale, I think it's going to be one of the best comics of the year.
Yeah, it took a turn. Crossover number 9, which has just some fantastic stuff in it. Primordial number 2, which is Jeff Lemire's weird, trippy space book.
Yeah, this is all about the Russian space dog Laika.
Yep. A new issue of Radiant Black, a new issue of Silver Coin, which picks up from the trade paperback of that anthology, the penultimate chapter of Batman Fear State, and another issue of Superman 78. Oh, and also Star Trek The Mirror War number 2, which introduces Mirror Universe Sisko and some of the Deep Space Nine crew.
Oh, that's interesting.
And also Mirror Universe Worf.
I haven't read that yet, but Mirror Universe Sisko and Worf are characters that were seen on Deep Space Nine.
And that makes sense. Is Worf head of the Klingon Empire?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's what he is here.
Yeah, and Sisko is like a... will eventually become one of the tolerated humans in the Klingon-Cardassian alliance.
Okay.
A sort of a necessary partner for him. Anyway, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. I've been enjoying... I'm really liking their exploration of the Mirror Universe.
Let's not forget...
Oh, and I forgot Friday, talking about it earlier.
Yeah, Friday, book 1, The First Day of Christmas, by Ed Brubaker and Marcos Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about this book, other than it looks gorgeous.
So this was their digital first book, and this is a... Friday is basically... it's a girl Friday. She and this guy, who's basically an Encyclopedia Brown type, they had been partners throughout the years. She's gone off to college, she comes back to town... and I guess before they left, they had an awkward kiss, and now he's acting like it never happened, and she's kind of hurt by that. But they wind up on a case that also seems to have a bit of a supernatural bent.
Yeah,
it's really, really good.
You know what's interesting to me is that Marcos Martin's art looks a little different from what I'm used to for mm-hmm. him, mm-hmm. and B, different from most of Brubaker's other books, because Sean Phillips draws 90% of his books.
Right.
Which is not to say it looks bad. It's fantastic art, and I'm excited to read it because it kind of pulses with a different vibe than his other stuff.
Yeah, it feels like Brubaker still, but it does feel different than the stuff he does with Phillips. Yeah.
And I always like reading like a full graphic novel from Brubaker is a great thing to do because, you know, it's got like... he is a great structure guy. He's a great beginning, middle, and ending guy.
I will say, though, this is just the beginning. There's no middle and end to this just yet.
What do you mean?
This is volume 1.
Oh.
This is not a complete story. This is
just him releasing OGN.
This is chapter 1.
It's Dune all over again.
This is 3 issues. It is Dune all over again. Because I believe it all told it's going to be like 9 or 12.
Well, I thought that because this was a digital first thing
it's not done. This is 3 issues.
Oh, okay.
They're big issues. But this is just the start.
Didn't you say it came out years ago?
No, it's coming out now.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like coming out like way back when. Oh, what was that digital thing that they were like never gonna? They only collect once.
Talking about
from Saga from Vaughn.
It's the same place. It is Vaughn's thing.
Yeah, but they did that was a standalone, right?
Yeah, but that came out a little while back. This is new stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, looking forward to
it's
because
really good.
It's Brubaker.
Yeah.
God dang.
Anything else on the comics front, or did we get everything?
I think we got everything.
That's all it. Right. We have some topics to discuss, but we're running out of time, so we may wait to save those for next week. I will tell you guys all about Eternals next week.
Oh, yeah.
hopefully Deadpool isn't in it.
Now, that would be quite the end credit sequence. Like, they're sort of... most like maybe serious movie or kind of break in bounds from Marvel, and then Deadpool's like, he should be the enemy. He should be like, what was that all about? That was a weird one. Just motor mouth in it.
If Deadpool is replacing Stan Lee in the new Marvel universe, I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to know. I will erase it from my memory and pretend I never saw it.
He's gonna like just drive by and like wave awkwardly during big scenes.
Yes.
You're like crying from some sequence, and Deadpool's like, hey!
Yes, Deadpool the Ruiner. That seems about right. Anyway, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.